Hi, and welcome to this Property Life podcast. My name is Caroline, and I'm a property investor, developer, property mentor, and coach. This week, we have the pleasure of speaking with Kenny Campbell, who works for Breadalbane Finance. And he has a niche area of expertise when it comes to the complex and ever-changing world of financing our developments and property projects. He will go into the intricacies of what we need to look at from an investor's point of view and what the lenders will look at and expect from us. And I know that you're going to really enjoy the content in this week's episode. Hi, Kenny. Great to see you today. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Great, thanks. And yourself?
All good. So I'm excited about today because you are here to talk to us about the chunky, sexy finance that sometimes feels a little out of reach for some of our new investors or listeners here. But if you could just start us off by telling us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you're at right now in your career.
Right. So, well, I'm a quantity surveyor by trade. So started off, I don't know, kind of fell into it, I suppose, university back in the early noughties. Same as now, there was a huge shortage in construction industry, and you know, people would come to careers fairs and say QSing, great career, and I said okay, give it a go. So I did that at university, and then worked in it. So I worked on construction sites for 7 years, which was great. I worked with McAlpine, so did big projects. It was good grassroots business. And then I suppose I moved on from there because I was all over the place. I was in Aberdeen a couple of years, Glasgow a few years. So, you know, it's like looking to start a family, settle down. I decided to go and try consultancy. So I moved in with Gardner and Theobald in their Edinburgh office, which was phenomenal. It was great. I was in there for 5 years and got chartered while I was in there, a chartered QS, did a little bit of project management. And then from there, I got an opportunity to try client side, being development manager. So that was kind of all around going in, site selections, building teams, delivering a project from inception to completion. And then, yeah, it was going good. Again, 4.5, and as things happen, I was several pints deep with my good friend who owns Breadalbane Finance. And he said, listen, what are you going to be doing? Do you fancy having a go at finance, at the finance side of it? Because you know, the view in Breadalbane was there was a little bit of a gap in the market for someone that comes in and looks specifically at development finance. So the seed was planted and it didn't take me long to make the decision. And here I am, I'm coming in kind of using my background to help people get development finance.
Wow, that's quite a route, isn't it, into finance, isn't it? Brokerage, quite a route that's a bit different, but great foresight to the owner of Breadalbane Finance. So you're in as the niche specialist, if you like, in development finance. Just as an overview, how are you finding the market at the moment? Here we are, interest rates creeping up, people getting a little bit twitchy, maybe lenders getting twitchy, investors getting twitchy. What are you seeing from your side?
I mean, well, there's no sugarcoating it. We're pretty tough. You know, I was looking at the Royal Institution Chartered Surveyors, you know, all their projections and reports aren't great reading. And, you know, you look at the graphs, we're in a trough that is only matched really by 2008 and 2020 going into COVID. So it is tough, but strangely, there's a lot of activity. You know, people aren't grinding to a halt. Lenders are still lending money. But it's other things like there's a real lack of stock out there. There's a lack of properties, a lack of development sites. You know, construction costs have been in the rise and are still going up, you know, whereas values are sort of staying. But all that means is that profit margins are being squeezed, which means a lot of developments in particular, they're not quite viable. And I suppose the way a lot of things work is that if they already own a site or it's sitting in the market, people say, let's just leave it 6 months. Let's leave it a year and see if costs change, costs come down, which a lot of people are hoping. So it's slow out there, without a doubt. For all those reasons, it's definitely slow. But, you know, at Breadalbane, we're really flexible. We look at all sides of the market. So we're still doing a lot with business owners, a lot of their own developments. A lot of people have maybe been planning and designing small housing projects. They're still going ahead. And as long as they're still profitability in them, they're still going. So we're still really busy, and a lot of the bigger projects, they're still getting lodged in the pipeline. They're going to happen at some point. You know what it's like, property and development is cyclical. So when you're in a trough, you know it's going to go on the way up soon. So we just want to kind of be there at the right place. And I'm sure a lot of these developments will kick off when the time's right.
Yeah, everything is temporary. And what I'm consistently advising and educating our students with is that whatever the masses are doing, do the opposite. So if everyone's holding back and stepping back and maybe not actually transacting, that's exactly the time where you could be picking up some bargains or be a little bit more creative. You maybe just have to dig deep and think outside the box, as they say.
You do. And, you know, we're seeing that at the moment. I suppose where a lot of people think there's opportunity at the moment is where there's a bit of a distressed housing market. You know, people aren't able to service their mortgages anymore. So we're starting to hear about more of them cropping up. Or indeed, on the development side, it's where a lot of developers may have started developing something and their costs have kind of spiraled out of control a little bit. And they're like, I just want out of this. You know, this isn't going to get me a profitable project. So they exit, and there are some opportunities out there. I've got a couple in debt right now in exactly that case where somebody's carried out the groundworks and then they're like, well, I've just sunk my profits into this because the profit's been squeezed. So I'm going to put it in the market, get out of it, move on to the next thing. So yeah, you just got to, as you are, Caroline, you know, you've got to stay in tight with agents, know what's coming up, trying to get a little off-market deal.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so talk us through your sweet spot, if you're like, the type of client that you would like to work with, and then we can go and talk about the type of solutions that you can come up with for that client.
Sure. Well, I mean, I suppose you always start by saying, like, listen, we've got a really wide-ranging lending panel so that we can deal with up to £30 million developments, but also down to £100,000 or less refurbishments, flips, without a doubt. I suppose the majority of our good work is done in the kind of £1 to £5 million range, where there's still been a lot of developments at the moment. And, you know, there's still a good flexible lending market out there. So that even if there are little issues, you know, profits being squeezed, you know that if you sit down with a lender that you know well, you can really talk it through, like settle all the risks a little bit to make everyone comfortable going into it. So we've done a good bit of that. And, you know, Aberdalbin, the reason I'm here is because Aberdalbin always like to try and add a bit of value to whatever product they're looking at, you know, rather than kind of churn them through. So I've come in to, and I can help people that haven't carried out many developments. You know, I think when you go into the development world, you know, even if you've worked in development, there's a lot of little, you know, activities that happen in the background that you maybe miss. So new developers that have maybe done a couple of developments in the past, they're now looking to level up. I can sit with them and say, look, here's how you want to structure things. You need to be able to mitigate all your risks. You need this sort of team. And for you to get the best chance of getting finance, you need to minimize your risks. And this is the way to do it. So they're the clients that I like because I feel like I add a lot of value. You know, a lot of the big guys, they know all this. They've done it a dozen times. I would obviously still do what other brokers do, which is, you know, partner them up with what I view the best lender for their project and move them on. But I like adding value. So the newer developers, that's who I like.
Yeah. Well, I definitely fell into that bracket because I wouldn't even call myself a developer at all. I'm more of an investor who has done the smaller stuff. And I've found myself in the arena on my most recent project, as you know, learning all about building control and, you know, all steels and all that. Well, I've done it before. I've probably not done it on the scale that I'm doing right now. So I would definitely say that you've added a lot of value to my current project. So the newish developers, sweet spot, 1 million to 5 million. What kind of creative or challenging scenarios have you come across in the last, say, 6 to 12 months that you've successfully solved for people?
Oh, well, they're all a challenge. That's the thing with development. They're all a challenge in some way. I suppose Breadalbin, one of the big selling points of Breadalbin is that we've got specialists in a lot of different finance products. So we do a lot of asset finance, invoice finance, a lot of business loans. We do a lot of restructuring and refinance. So where we've done really, inventive solutions is where somebody will come with a business and they're trying to develop a couple houses. They've maybe got a funding gap or, something's not stacking up. We can look at their overall business to say, well, listen, how about we, if you've got a fleet of cars, let's refinance them. If you have, can we remortgage? Do you have unencumbered property where we can go and get flexible funding against that? And I suppose we can sit down with the specialist from Breadalbin's team and unpick that for a client. So we can be really inventive in how we approach any financial problem. But I think for property in particular, where, lenders always like the borrower to put in money, what they call the hurt money, So sometimes, borrowers don't have that or they struggle to come up with it, or they would rather stay liquid and keep it in their pocket. So knowing that there's multiple ways to raise money for development is a really great tool for a lot of clients. We've done that, I suppose, for an example. We've been involved with the development of a few clients of their own properties. So a couple where they've owned land and they want to develop, say, one of them was a big workshop and showroom because they sell a lot of agricultural equipment. And, when you're building something for yourself, you want to make it pucker. You want to give it all the bells and whistles. But, if you put that in the market, you probably wouldn't get the value back from those bells and whistles. So they were needing to raise some additional funding in the background. And what we did is we looked at their machinery. So we were able to get the property and development funding specifically for their building. And then everything else they wanted to put in, we refinanced some of the vehicles so they get money out of that. And it worked out great. And of course, once it's all done, exit on to a mortgage, which I think you've met my colleague James. We've got a specialist in commercial mortgages as well. So we can attack it from different angles, and it works great. It works really well.
I love that example because actually the you approach your own house development very differently from an investment from a finance point of view, because I know that on my own house there was no budget. It was like whatever I want I'm going to get, and I don't care how much it costs, like that's what's happening. But on a project that's a development on a commercial level that you're going to use in a business or whatever, then you have to be a lot more stringent with those costs and staying to budget.
Indeed, and it's, I suppose with my QS hat on, that's where a good quantity surveyor always comes in. And you should stay close to your surveyor and your valuer all the way through because, to be a bit obtuse, sometimes each person in a team will pull their own way. So a QS, they're always doom and gloom. They're always like, that's too expensive, make it less. Whereas an architect, they want to showcase what they can do. So they're always trying to design something that stands out, but maybe costs a lot. So, this is what comes with experience. When you sit in the middle, you've always got to know, is it worth doing? Is it worth putting money into this? Will I get a return out of that? And you need to use the professionals around you to make those decisions, which is a trick that you see all the really good, successful developers doing. They take that advice and apply it really well.
Okay, so you have multiple hats there then. When you're sitting down with a client looking at their development, you're thinking primarily about getting the funding for it, but you're probably looking with your QS hat thinking, where could this potentially go out of control cost-wise?
Well, that's it. And I suppose the key thing that I found, the kind of where I'm finding I add a lot of value is that there can be a little bit of a communication gap between the finance side people and the construction side people, which tends to be, again, if I'll take a bigger bank or a bigger lender as an example. They'll typically have three parts, which is the first kind of BDM sales side, getting indicative terms, and then you'll have an underwriter that will work with a valuer and a development monitor to look into the nuts and bolts of the design and the project, and then you've got the credit committee at the end who will look at the bank's risk, basically how much are they willing to lend. So because there's a mixture of people in there when it comes to development, sometimes the two don't talk to each other quite clearly, and I'm now in a great place to pick that up, to say, wait a minute, that's not the biggest risk. So sometimes the financial people say, oh, you've not got planning for this yet. But you say, well, relax, it's 10 weeks into planning, it'll land in the next few weeks. It's not that big a risk, it's a time thing. And that's a very simple example. But you know, in every development, risk is the key thing. There's always going to be a range of risks, and it's understanding how big that risk is. Is it something to do with the structure? Is it planning? Is it, you know, the exit? And being able to fully understand that and, you know, translate that, communicate that to the decision makers is what makes the finance go smoothly and become a successful product.
Brilliant. So in your business at the moment, you would deal with the finance for the development project, and then would it be one of your colleagues that does the back end finance, or another colleague that does the purchase finance, or would you tend to do all of that as the point of contact within the business?
Well, we're very relationship led, you know, so it's all about dealing, you know, getting very close relationship. But yeah, the way that we are structured now is, for instance, if somebody wanted to come in and buy land, we'd look at the best way to do that, you know, typically by a mortgage. However, sometimes it's better to keep your land unencumbered. So again, do you have other assets? Do you have other property? Do you have assets like vehicles or plant? Even can you take a business loan? Because then you can buy a bit of land, keep it unencumbered, and then development finance is where I would come in. And then for exit, yeah, my colleague James Johnson, he's the expert one that can exit. So we'd all come together and kind of work closely with the client. And we think it works really well because we're spending all our time looking at one product. And, you know, 50% of a broker's job is really understanding the lending market, which at the moment is changing. Not even month to month, week to week. So a lot of time is put into that. So I would love to do all the mortgaging as well, but no chance I've got time to, you know, keep all that knowledge of the development market along with the mortgage side.
Well, I guess that's maybe where your business really does differ from other brokerages, because you tend to have one broker that does purchase, development, and then back-end finance. So that's really quite niche. You will know that development finance market inside out, and you will know it so well that you can advise your clients for the best product for the project.
Yeah,
Brilliant.
indeed. That's the theory anyway, Caroline.
Brilliant. So give me some more examples of scenarios that you've had challenges with in the past that you've managed to come up with solutions. I love the example of the vehicles with the house.
I mean, I suppose the most simple one is always the first question that a lender asks when somebody comes with a development is, what's your experience? Now, this touches on a load of stuff we've discussed before. It's because, you know, developments have all these risks, and it's always experience that trumps, you know, anything else and how you go about that. Now, if somebody comes with a bit of development and they've not got any experience, that's the first red flag. So the way you get around that is, you know, you can start consulting with your client to say, right, you need to do a lot of surveying, for instance. So we've helped put them in touch with people. An example would be some, well, as you know, you like the kind of Edinburgh properties like that, where you go in, those walls have been standing for 120, 30 years. You don't know what's behind it. The only way to mitigate all of those risks is to go in, make sure that you do loads of surveys. So that when you do come to look at the finance side, you can put all that on the table and say, look, we know that we're not experienced, but we're hiring a project manager. We've done loads of surveys. We've mitigated our risks. And then a lender will say, okay, this has really been thought about. So we can maybe overlook that this is your first bigger project. So that's a really simple one. And it's one I see all the time. A lot of developers will go to a high street or a challenger bank and immediately be knocked back because they can't prove they've had two or three successful projects in the past. You know, because we know the wider lending market for development finance, we know who will look at that. And it's always the smaller guys where you can sit down with an underwriter or a decision maker and really explain that to them and show that all these risks have been mitigated. always say it's like the bigger the lender, they've got this check sheet. And if you
Yeah.
don't tick one box, it's like computer says no, it's kind of book closed.
Yeah.
Whereas with the smaller guys, there's a lot of let's look more into this. Does the deal make sense? If it does make sense, there's always a discussion to be had. So that's great. We look at it that way. Other, like, let's think, other challenges.
The planning side of things, we've talked about that a little because
We talked about that. Yeah, I suppose planning. This is more from a QS point of view, than a finance point of view. But the planning and building warrant. Now, we've had this discussion. Having been a consultant, the best advice I can give developers of any size is build a team and don't be afraid to spend the money. I know it can be difficult. Spend the money up front. I've said it before, and I feel like I'm saying risk a thousand times, but it's because it's such a big part of it that you need to mitigate your risks. If you look at any project, find out what the risks are early, and then you've got to deal with them. You've got to either get rid of them, you can mitigate them, or you take them on, but you need to know what they are. So for planning, yeah, if you're developing a few houses in an area where there's hundreds of houses, it's probably not that big of a risk, Whereas if you're going into a niche city centre site, you're trying to go in, buy a property, change its use. If it's a listed building, you're probably trying to change some features so that somebody might get upset about. These are all risks, but the way you mitigate them is getting the right consultants on at the right time. Survey, survey, survey. Take a look what's out there. Use planning consultants, use architects with the right background. And then, of course, as I say, always play in your valuer and your QS as well, just to make sure that what you're doing for property, A, it's not going to cost too much. You're always going to get money back. But B, is it worth doing it? I've had one project where somebody wanted to take the whole facade off a building and put it back on. It was going to cost just to make it look great. He wants it to look like a premium property, but he was never going to recoup that money. And that took, weeks of what are the solutions for doing that? Get it priced and then say it's not worth it, and it's those challenges come up all the time, all the time.
Okay, so this I'm going to be really blunt now because a lot of our listeners will not know the difference between taking a three-bedroom terraced house, ripping it back to brick and building a six bed, six bath HMO. Would that be classed as a development? To me, I would be that's probably a smallish development,
So
but
this is actually interesting,
I
yeah.
wouldn't need QS for that, right? And I'm not going to get a QS involved for something like that. Where is the line, Kenny, from your point
So
of view? Where is it from heavy refurb to development?
I would class that as a development. I
Where?
think, right. So I've had this conversation a few times, and everyone's got a different take on it. My take on it after talking to a lot of lenders is when you are changing the value of a security, you have to view that as a development. And I think you need to be careful about how you purchase these properties and what you're doing to them as well. Because if you look at the fine print of a lot of mortgages, they'll probably say as much. If you are doing anything to that building, we want to know about it. Because exactly what you're saying there, at some point, you'll have everything gutted, knocked down, and the building will be worth significantly less than when you bought it. So you have to, the right way to do it is to get a lender that will go on that journey with you. Now, we've got quite a few. If you're buying properties like that through a business, we've got a lot of products out there that will allow light refurbishment, which will, mostly be finishes and it needs to be 20 to 25% of the value, or medium, which is probably maybe sticking an extension on or a little bit of more structural work. I suppose you could term that as maybe 50% of the cost. And then once you're getting into full ground up development, if you're gutting something out and you're trying to increase the value by three, four, fourfold, then it's full development. Now, I would still say try and get a core team around you. Or listen, if you're experienced and you walk into a property and you're like, I'm 90% sure I know what to do here, absolutely go for it. But if there's any question mark there, you know, it costs, it potentially doesn't cost that much to get an architect in, a QS in, double check things. And listen, I suppose there's different views on this. I would rather spend the money on the device, know there was a problem, know there was a solution, and then execute it. There's a different train of thought, which is I'm not going to bother spending that money, and if I find a problem, I'll have some money to deal with it. I suppose it depends on where your risk is. You know, if you like taking on risk like that, then go for it. But I suppose having been a QS and seen a thousand problems, I would like to get those issues flushed out as early as possible.
Yeah, and I think that is really sound advice because when someone does cross over, as Nick and I did, from the investing, going from refurb to maybe heavy refurb to small development to maybe larger development, you might have got into a habit of doing things a certain way. And you know, having an architect manage the project or a QS manage the project, or if drainage or foundations involved, that in my head, that's like, you know, that's a step too far. Drainage and foundations, I need a full-on team. But like listed buildings and planning and building control, having that team is absolutely essential. So from the lending side of view, if let's say someone takes out development finance with you and then does something that was unplanned per se, what like for, as an example, let's say that the plan was always to convert it into XYZ, right, and look a certain way, and then halfway through the development they change their mind and say, actually, I'm going to do ABC. What does that mean for them, from a lender's point of view? What ex you know, because you know, some people
So,
are rogue, right? They go off that rogue level.
yeah, I mean, there's two angles to that. One, if always be careful if you've got planning or building warrant, you've got to stick to it. If you change it, you need to get those changes ratified before doing them. If you don't, and sometimes you don't, if you're doing non-structural work, if it's all refurbishment and the like, and you change halfway through, from a finance point of view, it's all about how much value are you adding to that property. So, in a very simple terms, you know, you'll start a property will start off here. You'll do work, the value will go up. You'll do more work, the value will go up. And a lender, development lenders will always lend on how much you're adding value. So they need to be aware of that. And the way they do that is through a development monitor. So if a development monitor comes, looks at the project, and they turn up one day and go, oh, wait a minute, I thought you were putting on an extension there and there's a wall now. Actually, it's not going to be worth as much once you've finished. So I need to tell the bank that, and the bank will or lender will maybe give a little bit less. So yeah, you just need to be careful. And I suppose the only advice I can say is just keep be honest and keep everyone informed, you know. And if you keep everyone informed, the worst that someone can say is, don't do that, or don't change, or we'll give you a bit less. There's normally a way around it. But yeah, keep everyone informed.
So the worst thing that could happen from a development point of view, in my mind, is running out of money before the development's finished. Is would you agree that that's the worst thing, or is there something worse than that? It falling down mid, I mean, you know, apart from catastrophic meteors hitting it, or it falling down mid development, from a finance hat point of view,
Oh,
would
yeah, listen, from the finance point of view, every funder wants you to get over the line. That's why they put in a lot of diligence. That's why they have development monitors, underwriters. It's a it absolutely they need you to get there because funders don't want to be you know, taking having to take projects in and dispose of them. So the way that I approach that is that you really need to have a frank conversation and do some sums very early on how much the equity input needs to be. Now, you need to go into a bit of depth to do that. You need to take a look at what are you doing, how much does that cost, when do you need all the money, and then you need to ask yourself, what realistically is the bank going to give me through that development or refurbishment? And you need to, it's too easy to turn a blind eye to it, and I think there's a big psychology thing there where people have finance within their grasp and just want to press the button. Sometimes you need to step back and say, actually, halfway through this project, I'm going to need 100 grand or 500 grand in my back pocket to get over a funding gap to get to completion. Now, if you look at that early enough, it may be there's a different product out there, or someone like myself can look at your wider portfolio and say, actually, I can raise you money against some flats on a second charge bridge that is maybe going to be expensive, but it's going to get you over that line. But flush it out early. So yeah, running out of money, it's not a place anyone wants to be. Again, you don't want to be in your heels. You don't want to have to go and be, asking around how do I raise this? But the best thing to do is just run the sums early doors. Make sure you've got contingency. Again, I know a lot of projects, they squeeze the contingency. So, everyone would love to have 10% going into a project, but a lot of times say, well, I think it's safe. I'm going to go down to five, and then they get everyone over the line. But then interest rates go up, or they find a soft spot in the ground as they're putting down foundations. Boom, your contingency is wiped out, and then yeah, you're sweating. So yeah, listen, making sure you've got enough money is so important. And as I say, because of my background, I do it a lot with clients to say, let's take a moment to run a cash flow forecast. Let's take a look at what the funder's probably going to give you. Are there funding gaps? And every fund, the funders typically will do things two way. One on how much have you spent that month, and they'll fund you that, or they'll do what's called a residual land value calculation, which at any one point they'll give you a value on your land. And both, depending on what way they value that, the pinch point will be in a different place. It might be at the start of a project, or it might be halfway through a project. You have to think it through.
And I'm very grateful for you to help us out on our current project. I know that I've now got a pot that I can go in and fish from if the gap arises on our on one of our current projects. And so highly recommend you sitting down with Kenny and talking through the options, because now I can sleep at night knowing that no matter what happens, the project's getting finished, the builder's getting his money, he's not walking off site, I'm not chasing around trying to find somebody new, which just literally would kill any profit in any deal. So thank you, Kenny, for the help that you've given me on that. And that's why you're sitting here right now, because you can massively add value to our community and our students. Anything else apart from get your right the right team involved surrounding you, have a contingency, know the pinch points on the lending. Any other little golden nuggets of advice that you'd give our listeners before we sign off here?
A really common one is developers say your profit's made the day you buy the site. You have to run your sums before you buy that site. If you buy a site and then at any point you're like, oh, I'm not going to make the profit I thought because I hadn't looked under this stone and I hadn't taken a look at the sales values, happens all the time. So I suppose that's just more from the successful people I work with. They do so much diligence before they buy a site, even before they've gone into planning or building more. And it needs to stack up. So I suppose do your homework, do it at the start. And if you're needing advice, that's just give me a call. I'm happy to talk to anybody at those early doors and point them the right way to, who's in the market that can give them advice they need for any project. I'm more than happy to do that.
Brilliant. So what's the best way for people to reach out to you if they're potentially looking at a site that they think, oh, I think I can make money from that, but I'm not sure, haven't done one before. How's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, we've got a website, bradalwynfinance.co.uk. My email address is kenny@bradalwynfinance.co.uk. Drop me an email. Hopefully, I don't know if there's a way I can put my details on here, but yeah, look at the website. We're all on there. We've got our mugshots on, so you'll be able to call any of us.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Kenny, for your time. I know that our listeners will have got a lot of value out of that. The numbers, the numbers, the numbers, contingencies, plan, 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 plan to the nth degree, and have surveys carried out so that you don't get any nasty surprises, because we don't want any of that. Well, I'll be speaking to
Absolutely.
you again very, very soon, Kenny. Thanks for your time today.
Great. No, thank you. Thanks, Caroline. Take care.
I'm sure you'll all agree that there were some golden nuggets of information in that episode, and I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with Kenny. Every time we have a conversation, I learn something new. And just because you know how to find a deal, assess the numbers, that doesn't mean that we are experts in how to actually finance and pull it all together, which is why working with a team of experts and specialists that are niche in a particular area is so vital to your business's success. If you want to hook up with Kenny, you can do so through Bedelbein Finance. Website is in the bio. And join us again next week for some fantastic content.